So, I want to pass around some information here. These star sheets are from not this past year, but a year and a half ago, when we did gender pre-selection. So, I'm going to touch on this also as part of it. So, this doesn't have all the sources that we need, but has some of them. So we'll just pass that around, because we're going to get to that at some point as well. Does everyone know each other? And some new people? You're Madison, obviously? And you are?
Siobhan.
You guys came together?
Yeah.
Okay, welcome. Okay, so this is the first mitzvah in the Torah. Now, what's interesting is that when you look at the breakdown of the five books of the Torah and how many mitzvot are in each one, so which book has the least mitzvot?
Probably the first one.
The first one, right? Bereshit. How many mitzvot are in the first book of the Torah?
Well, the first one, this is be fruitful and multiply.
Okay.
Yeah, is that what we're starting on tonight?
Yes, but how many are in the, how many?
I don't know.
Well, there's that.
That's the only one.
There's that, there's Mila.
You're right.
I don't know, it's...
there's three.
Only three. Bibles?
Nope.
No,
that's Asos Deros.
There's three.
The laws of Noah count?
Well, there's not a mitzvah. There's not one, the 613 mitzvah, that is the laws of Noah. That's kind of a category into itself.
Could be Cain and Abel.
Yeah, don't murder.
So, okay, so we'll talk, it's interesting. Okay, so the third one is the Gid HaNasha, the prohibition of eating the Gid HaNasha, the, what's the English term for that? The sinew, the filet mignon question.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot the name of it.
The English.
Sciatic nerve. Sciatic nerve, very good. Right, and that comes from the story of Jacob fighting the angel. So what's interesting is that we have a lot of concepts in the book of Bereshit that certainly become mitzvahs later on, right? Like murder, for example, right? The prohibition of do not murder. So we don't take the story of Cain and Hevel, of Cain and Abel, and say, if we see from here there's a prohibition of murder, that doesn't come until the Ten Commandments, right? So what's interesting about the first mitzvah in the Torah is that it's not really listed as a mitzvah like we'd expect. We'd expect it would come back later on as a mitzvah, and it just kind of starts off. Let me explain what I mean. So if you look what the Torah says, the Torah's description of this mitzvah comes kind of in a roundabout way. Look at your sheets, your handy dandy sheets. It says in Bereshit 1, chapter 1, verse 28, God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, the bird of the sky, and every living thing that moves on the earth. In Hebrew, Vayverech otam Elohim vayomar lahem, Elohim pru urvu milu et haaretz, v'kiv shuha, v'vedu bidgat hayam uv'of hashamayim v'chol chayat terameset al haaretz. So, you know, and when we're going through these mitzvot, like I've said this before, we have, you know, like in Men in Black when they took that little thing and then erase your memory. Okay, so I've got that little thing. Okay, I'm erasing all your memories because you have to forget everything that you know about this mitzvah if we're going to look at this objectively. Okay, so if I gave you this pasuk, I gave you this verse, and you've never seen it before. Okay, and I said there's a mitzvah in here. How would you describe the mitzvah?
Make babies.
Okay, you just told us what we already know. Look at it. Read the words inside.
Oh, and dominate every other species on the planet?
I think about it first. Put together a cogent idea and then present it. Don't just like spit things out at us. All right, come on. What do we got here? How would you describe the commandment that is in this verse, in this pasuk?
Multiply your species, and then have those, you know, species control or take over the other species, if you want, or rule over the other species.
Basically, okay. Take over the earth.
Yeah. Take over the earth. Take over the world.
Like damn species.
Okay, good. So this is the mission statement. Okay, good. So this is your task, right? God creates humanity, and says, and humans say, what do we do? What are we supposed to do here? I don't know. What do we do? We hang out. What do we do? So what do? You're supposed to be fruitful and multiply, but that, and that's the part that we always quote. Be fruitful and multiply. But there's a whole second half of this verse. Umilu et aretz, and fill it up. Right? Vikiv shua, and conquer it. Right? And, right? and rule over the fish of the sea and the bird of the sky and every living thing that moves on the earth. Now, for us, we take this for granted, but you have to understand. You've got Adam, one person, in the world of thousands or hundreds of millions, however many animals there are, and he gets put down in this world, lonely little him. He's looking around. He's not thinking that he's in control here, right? He's thinking, they're in control, and I'm just going to try to stay out of the way. You know, he's not going to mess with the lions. Or is he going to control them? I just, you know, I'm just going to stay in my cave, and I'll, you know, thank you very much.
But that time he wasn't hungry yet.
No, well, he was hungry.
Then he got kicked out of that place.
And then it gets even harder for him when he gets kicked out. Now he's got to work.
Right.
Does this come before they leave the Garden of Eden or after?
This is before. He's just been created. Like, you know, nothing's happened yet.
Has Eve been created yet?
Well, it depends how you understand Eve's creation. If you understand Eve's creation, it was that Adam was created both male and female, and what God does is split them into two parts. You know, instead of just being one person that has both male and female characteristics, then Eve has been created. But they just haven't separated. If you understand that she doesn't exist till Adam asks for her, then she hasn't been created. So it just depends how you understand that part of the story.
To be fruitful and multiply.
Well, that's true. I mean, how is he being fruitful and multiply? Well, it depends what the plan is.
Right. I mean, what? Right. Multiply seems kind of obvious, but what's fruitful? Right? Why are there two things there? Why is it two words? Why is it not one thing?
Okay, good. So that's another question. Why do we need two words? One or the other? Fruitful? Or if it should be fruitful, maybe you can understand what that means. But you're right.
Maybe there were both, so you wouldn't mistake the intent.
If it just said multiply, what would you think?
To quote the learned Sam, make babies.
Right. Exactly. All right, so I mean, there seems to be something. Okay, now is that the only commandment, or is the commandment to be fruitful and multiply? How does the second half of the verse connect to that commandment? How has filling the earth? Let's say everyone is fruitful and multiply, but we don't fill up the earth. We all decide to live in Hawaii, right? You know what? Let's all live in Hawaii and California. Right? Let's just ignore half, we all live in a few cities, right? Which is how the world is kind of progressing anyway, right? Everyone's leaving villages and, you know, moving into the big cities. So, have we not fulfilled the commandment then?
Well, it says to fill the earth.
So, what does that mean, to fill the earth? Is that part of the mitzvah? Is that part of the commandment?
And that means, well, you have to be fruitful and multiply if you're going to have enough people to fill the earth. But to fill the earth means you're going to be everywhere.
Right, you have to do both. Yeah, right. I mean, civilization begins in the Fertile Crescent and slowly makes its way out. But it's not like, you know, people are just spreading out all over right away. It takes time. Okay. All right, and what does it mean to conquer? How does that connect it to this as well? Meaning, so that, this is what I mean, that it's hard to see a mitzvah in here a little bit. Because there are a lot of verses in Bereishit that you look at and say, these are moral imperatives. These are mission statements, right? Oh, these are stories that seem to teach us something important. But it's hard to say it's a mitzvah the way we refer to a mitzvah. And this is the exception to the rule. I mean, it's a little different. The next mitzvah we get is Brit Milah, circumcision. But that's very clearly, you know, God commands Avraham, and Avraham does it for Yitzchak, and it's on the eighth day, and that becomes a sign for future generations. I mean, that's really built up as a mitzvah type of thing. This is really listed. It doesn't seem to be a mitzvah, right? It just seems to be kind of what God tells Adam to do, so he does it. But how does that connect to the future of the Jewish people? So that's what really makes it unique. Okay.
Well, also, isn't it before the Jewish people?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. This is the one mitzvah that doesn't have any Jews involved in it. Because we don't consider Adam to be Jewish.
Why would that have to be binding then?
Exactly. That's what makes it even more bizarre, right? Is that this mitzvah should apply to all of humanity, right? This shouldn't be a Jewish thing at all, right? We understand circumcision becomes a Jewish thing, but that's Abraham and Yitzchak, and that becomes, I mean, those are, you know, the beginnings of the Jewish people. This is way before that. Question? Antonio?
Mm-hmm.
No?
Okay.
I like Philip Rogers.
Well, also, it's really quick, like, if we do consider a mitzvah, then it's hard to kind of distinguish it from one mitzvah and not three. You know? fill the earth and then rule over fish and sea. Like, it seems like it would be three. It's either going to be like three or none. You know, how can we say the first part's a mitzvah and the second ones aren't considered like
this? So we'll have to see if we can. Mitzvahs. We'll have to see what the rabbis of previous generations have done to understand the second half, what it teaches us about the mitzvah puer vu. Because we'll see they learn certain things about the mitzvah from the second half of the pasuk. So we'll get to that. But it's a very interesting question. Okay. Another question. Why do we need this to be a mitzvah at all? Why do we need a mitzvah to be fruitful and multiply? Meaning, if I had to ask you what becomes a mitzvah, how do you describe, why do we need mitzvahs at all? Why do we need to have mitzvahs? What's the purpose of them?
They're normally things that, or often things that are opposed to our natural instincts, like, you know, respecting people and not murdering people, or there are things that we don't understand, red heifers. It's not telling us to go do something that naturally we are just inclined to go do.
Exactly, right. So typically, so you need a mitzvah to tell you, not that everyone's going around murdering people, but we do have at times people, certain people, all people have a desire to hurt other people. So we need a mitzvah to tell us, we know you're thinking that, don't do it. Hashem's saying, I know I gave you that thought, that emotion, that instinct, and I'm telling you, I'm giving you the commandment to control it to help you become a better person, more successful. But we don't have a mitzvah to eat. We don't have a mitzvah to breathe, right? We don't have a mitzvah to do things that every basic living thing does, feels that it needs to do to survive. Procreation is one of the most basic instincts of the animal world, right? I mean, it goes down to the, you know, to the core. You know, you watch the Discovery Channel and you see the things that the animals do to protect their young, to sacrifice for their young. It goes way beyond what us humans do in most cases. Yeah, when I was down in looking at the elephant seals, what's it called, in Nuevo, right? I mentioned them before because it's fascinating. I mean, the elephant seals, they go and they live on the beach and they don't eat for like 4 to 5 months because they're mating and they're not going to leave, they're not going to go back into the sea until they're young or big enough to fend for themselves. So they literally starve themselves for months until they feel they're young or old enough, and they just have an instinct of when that time is. So there's nothing for them to eat. They're on the beach. They only can eat in the ocean. Whales do this all the time. You know, whales will live in nurseries so they're young or safe from intruders, and they'll live there for months until they then go travel halfway around the world. Yeah.
So is this viewed as kind of the demarcation point of what made man man? I mean, prior to Hashem saying this, would Adam have been like an animal? You know, more.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying we have the basic animal instincts that we have.
Well, I mean, but obviously, all animals don't go and take over the world, right? There aren't cities of lions or gorillas or orangutans, right?
Okay.
So
there are some bugs that might.
But is. So obviously, right, humanity is different from animals in a number of ways.
Right.
When Adam was.
It is, this seems to be the fact that we're being told to do something that we kind of already do, we would procreate. I mean, what's. There's something
here.
There.
Exactly. So that's what I'm asking. We have to figure out what's there. What this mitzvah is teaching us that we would know for ourselves.
This would make more sense after we left Egypt, because you would want to build society up to a bigger size so that you could go back and.
Well, it's true, but we have to get to the point where we have enough people where society, you know, builds. It's interesting because if you kind of play the story out, other items told to procreate and to build up society and build up a population who were pretty much all wiped out in the flood, right? So basically, for generations, they're procreating, building, conquering, only to see it all wiped out, which is just kind of an interesting side note. So, and we'll see how that applies, because then Noah is given the same commandment after he leaves the ark. He's kind of reintroduced. Now it's your job to pru'er vu. right? So it happens again.
Then why this one as opposed to the one given to Noah?
And we actually see them, a lot of the commentaries combine them into one mitzvah. That it's really the same mitzvah that's being taught twice.
Maybe we see that without any other structure, right? We see Adam, he has this mitzvah, and there's no other kind of rules. The society doesn't last, they die. Then we see Noah, and he gets his seven more laws, and it's better, but it's still not great. And then we finally see the Jewish people with an entire framework of mitzvot.
It's constantly stepping up, yeah. So let's start with a central question that can kind of give us a context here. Okay, who does this mitzvah applying to? Is it applying to men or women or both?
I think both.
So the assumption is both. Okay. So the Talmud says it applies only to men. That this is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah for the poor vu in the Torah commandment is a commandment on men, and it's a mitzvah for the women as well, but the commandment is on the man. Okay. Why would that be? Well, a few different ways of looking at it. Who is more in which gender is the desire to have children stronger than the other?
Women.
Right. If we assume that for women the desire to have children is stronger, okay? So much so that maybe it becomes redundant for women to get the commandment to have children because it's such a strong natural desire. For men, it's a very different concept, right? Rearing children, having children. I think we can just look at society around us and we don't have to, experiment very far, right? Society over and over again tells us that the way relationships work, and they work probably even more so today than they did 50 years ago, is that the couple is going out and basically it's the female's job to force him to get married at some point, right? At some point it becomes her responsibility. Either we're getting married or I'm out of here, right? There's always that point, right? But that's kind of the relationship progresses in a way that he feels the pressure to get married. She can't stay any longer if they don't get married. She wants to have a family. He can wait another couple of years. What's the big deal, right? I mean, this is meisim b'kol yom, as they say. This is basically how society functions. Every movie, TV show, that's kind of the running theme in our society today, is that that's kind of the way it works. And I mean, it's just showing. It just the psychology just plays out that basically women have a much stronger instinct and desire to be in situations of family and couplehood, right? When for men, it tends to be more of a struggle, right? You can use David Letterman as your latest example, if you'd like, right? So when we talk about the redundancy of this mitzvah, well, maybe for men it's not so redundant, right? Maybe for men it's not as redundant as it is for women. That for women it could be very much so that, and that's something the Aruch HaShulchan points out, is that women don't need this mitzvah as much as men do. Because for men, there is the thought, you know what, I can go my whole life and not have children. I can push it off. I can do it later, right? But if there is a mitzvah, a commandment, and a commandment they're not supposed to push off till later in your life at some point, it pushes men in a direction where they're going to be in a more family-oriented setup.
But this is before the time of birth control. So, I mean, it's not they can't really decide to have children. The man still has the instinct to be intimate.
My friend, so birth control was not created with the pill.
This is true.
It's not a new concept. Okay, it's not a new concept. It's been refined. It's been technologically advanced. But we only have to go back to the first parsha in the Torah to learn about birth control.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the parsha, right, we get the story of they were born to them. The sons of the ruler saw that the daughters of man were good, and they took themselves wives from whoever they chose. And Hashem said, "My spirit shall not be shall not contend evermore concerning man, since he's but flesh. His day shall be 120 years." And here we get descriptions of also situations where men would take multiple wives, and they would have the wife that was for bearing children, and then they'd have the wife who was there for not bearing children, right? Because if the wife bears children, she's busy, she gains weight, you know, it's like, it's, you know, they wanted the, you know, different wives for different purposes, right? So we see all the way back to the beginning that you know, men just had that, have that in them, you know, that if they're not commanded to have children, then if they'll at least push it off, right? And certainly won't, you know, I mean, in today's society, you don't meet 26-year-old men who are fathers. You don't meet them, right? Unless you are in very specific societies. You don't meet them. They don't exist. You know, if you meet a 29-year-old person in secular society today who's a father, you're surprised, right? Why? Because why should they? Why would they, right? For a number of reasons, it just gets pushed further and further back. 50 years ago, that wasn't the case, right? My father's generation, not 50 years ago, but, you know, he was married at 23, and that was the societal norm, right? And, you know, they have all these studies now about the average age where men and women are getting married and how it keeps going, you know, further and further back. So in many ways, this is... So if you look at the mitzvah that way, so then maybe we understand how it's not... how there is a desire, or at least a temptation, that the Torah is confronted on some level, right? Now we see at least a sense, okay, there is a desire here to wait to have children. Also, you have to realize, now that, what is a mitzvah? So mitzvah is a responsibility, right? A mitzvah is a responsibility that you do something, even though you don't feel like it and don't necessarily want to do it, right? So you don't always feel like going, getting up and davening in the morning. You don't always feel like, you know, walking past a non-kosher restaurant and, you know, and not going inside, right? So the same thing here. Raising children is hard. Having children, raising children is hard and it's taxing and it's difficult and it's expensive and it changes your life and all those things, right? All of those things. So it is a little different. In the animal world, right, they don't think about, well, if we have children, we can't go out on Saturday night, right? Like, they don't have those. That doesn't enter their thinking. But for humans, we think in a much more complex way. And when it comes to having children, how many children to have, when to have children, so that's all part of the conversation. It's all part of the thinking. So when there's a mitzvah, it's kind of teaching you and telling you that, no, this has to be a priority, even though it doesn't feel like it. Now, obviously, there has to be a quote for you. Was it the Rosh Hashanah who said this? I saw a line. No, it was in the Sefer Achina. He said that the mitzvah begins for men when they turn 17. And by the time they turn 20, if they haven't had a child, they've already passed on the mitzvah. Right? They neglected to fulfill the mitzvah if they're 20 years old and they don't have a child.
Yeah, but I've heard that too, that if somebody beyond the mitzvah that we should get married.
Right.
And if a man marries a day before he dies,
right,
therefore the mitzvah.
Okay, so we'll actually, that'll be part of the discussion. Is there a mitzvah to get married? How that's
okay.
Related to this.
Right.
But obviously, you know, the society doesn't work quite that way anymore, but the idea was that you should try to, you know, now life expectancies were different, life was different. But still, you know, the focus was, if you're not getting married by a certain time, you're wasting this opportunity. Okay. Now, it's interesting. So, like we said before, there's a few different times when we see a commandment in the Torah to have children. So one desire. So now we're talking about the reasons why people would not want to have children. So one reason given, is, like I was talking about, is because if the mitzvah is for men, it's because men might have a reason not to have children. And I think today women also would have many reasons why they wouldn't want to have children or want to have children until later. What are the other reasons why people would not want to have children? That's more of like a, I don't know, a desire. Well, why else do people not want to have children?
Economical reason.
Okay.
Especially today. 100 years ago, a woman never birthed.
Right, that's what I'm referring to.
And
yeah.
Today,
so career and financial concerns, right.
More okay. Education, it's less longer until
So definitely the thinking has changed. There's a few other. Let me put it this way: when in the Torah do we see the Jewish people deciding not to have children intentionally?
In Egypt.
In Egypt, right? At what point?
When they were throwing the baby boys and killing the baby boys,
they just so Amram, Moshe's father, right? Miriam and Aaron's father, who's the leader of the group, the people, decides that they should not have children because it's too traumatic, right, for the people to do so. 50% chance their child will be killed right away. It's too hard for us as a people to go through that. So sometimes you'll have times when you don't have children for practical reasons or philosophical reasons, right? Or I don't want to raise my child up in this world. I don't want to, you know, let's say you're living in the Warsaw Ghetto, right? Do you want to have children? What's going to happen to that child, right? What's going to happen if we give birth to a child? You know, who knows? I mean, you know, so there could be times when just philosophically or just practically you think this is a terrible idea. And that was Amram's thinking. This is a terrible idea. If we have children, our children will be murdered. We can't go through that. Until his daughter, Miriam, who's 6 years old, says what you're doing is worse than Paro, because Paro's punishing the boys, you're also punishing the girls, because now girls can't be born.
It says that in here? The
Medrash says that, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So that's a form of birth control also. Right? That's a form of, that's a desire not to have children. Again, that's not the thinking an animal has. Animals don't really think of the consequences. And the truth is, if a mother turtle was thinking about, well, if I lay 25 eggs, only 5 are going to make it. Because the animals are going to eat some, and a few of them are going to try to get to the sea, and they're not going to make it, right? I mean, they would never have children, right? I mean, you know, the odds that they go through, they basically have just multiple, you know, whatever happens, happens. That's kind of, animals don't have the psychological baggage of what could happen to this child. Human beings are different. So that's another big difference between us and animals, is that animals don't think in those terms. So our having children is different. There's a case in the Gemara of Chizkiah, of the king, King Chizkiah. It's Gemara in Brachos and Daf Yud. And Chizkiah is intentioned not having children. And the prophet comes to visit him and asks him, why not? And he says, you have to realize, I've seen through prophecy that my grandson's going to be an evil person. And it's going to... I'm sorry? His son's going to be an evil person. What did I say? Grandson? His son's going to be an evil person, and he's going to, like, destroy the people of Israel, and ends up causing the first base images to be destroyed. So he doesn't want to have children because he wants to avoid that fate. And so God says through the prophet, that's not your job. Your job, you have a mitzvah to have a child. If you try to think in those terms, what could happen, you know, then you're kind of playing... you're playing God to a certain extent. So that's another reason why a person might have a desire or the thinking not to have a child. Okay. So there's another interesting perspective here. Here the Aruch HaShulchan, and this is, you know, the Shulchan Aruch and the Aruch HaShulchan, this is the first topic that they discuss in... One of the sections is about marriage and divorce, called Evan Ha'ezer, and that becomes the focus of the entire... And so they start off with the mitzvah of having children, and that leads into the marriage and then divorce as well. So here he discusses the possibility that that for women, the mitzvah did apply initially. So he said that originally the mitzvah did apply for women. And said, so what's he say? He says, V'ishto dehabruim harishonim hayu behechre shigam and kevos yuchulu behabracha kevin shemihem hushe te olam uvila dehen yeshad lifrot ulaharbot. So maybe the bracha or the mitzvah initially falls on men and women. Until what point? Until the point when the earth has been filled. Right? Meaning, once the earth has been filled, now is there still a mitzvah? Right? Because we said, the mitzvah is, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Well, at what point do we say the earth has been filled? Then we'd agree, it's, you know, basic level, the earth has been filled. You know, obviously not everywhere. Right? There's not a lot of people living in Idaho, but, I mean, for the most part, the earth has been filled. So there should be no mitzvah anymore.
No.
In America, only 5% of the land is being lived on.
So I'm saying just keep going until every square inch is filled. I'm saying Inland of Ourself will never end. You can always... We're never going to fill up all the land.
Well, I think that's what the second part applies to, right? If it's if we have subdued it, right? If it's farmland or being utilized for us,
right.
That counts. We don't have to have, you know, one person every four amo, right. to say we have filled the earth.
Right. Like Russia's never going to be filled with people. You know, like, there's going to be parts that are going to be barren or used for...
And there are also parts that are not habitable.
Exactly, right. Antarctica's just not going to be filled. Right? That's never... Right. I mean... The parts that are just not practical to live on. So maybes in the mitzvah apply for both men and women initially, right? And then after that, it just applies to men because the job was done. And what's the next stage? The next stage is v'kif shuha, and this comes up a lot as well. The issue of kif shuha, that also can be a sign that not only do you have to fill the land, but you have to conquer it, right? What does it mean to conquer the land? So here's where the Talmud learns out. That's also saying that this mitzvah applies to men, because men, by definition, are more likely to conquer. Who's conquered land throughout history? Who goes out and conquers new land and discovers new land and inhabits new land and does all that? That's much more likely to be men. That's basically saying that could be a sign that the mitzvah was for men more than women.
It doesn't say conquer, it says subdue.
Well, kovesh usually means conquer. I mean, translation, whatever the translation. I mean, that usually means conquer. Yeah. Okay. What?
I concur. It means conquer.
Yeah, thank you. Kovesh is Yitro, like in Pirkei Avos, the conqueror. So like, it's the same thing. Subdue is like to conquer in a way that you've defeated it or you've overpowered it. So the question comes up for women. So here the Rambam has an interesting statement in Perkhof Aleph of Yisuribiyah. It says, Yesh reshud le'isha shelo tinase li'olam. O tinase li'siris. So the question is there a mitzvah to get married as well? Right? So if we assume that having children is supposed to be in the context of marriage, so either there's a mitzvah to get married or there's a mitzvah to have children, and getting married is the beginning of that mitzvah. But if the mitzvah applies more to men than to women, then do women have a mitzvah to get married? So he writes that not necessarily. Or at the very least, let's say, can a woman marry a man who she knows can't have children? Right? Well, you would say, okay, because she doesn't have an obligation to have children, so she can marry him. But could a man marry a woman he knows can't have children? That could be more of an issue, because he knows he can't fulfill the mitzvah if he marries her. So that has to at least be in the discussion, that has to be part of the thinking. So, there's a lot also that goes into it. Also, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about not only is it important that men need to get married, you know, for certain reasons, and women, you know, women are more likely to live, because of the yitzhar, because of the desire, so it becomes a bigger deal than a man becomes married. For women, obviously, it's important, and every woman should get married. Also, men need more of a, like we said, men need more of a mitzvah to get married. Women, by definition, are, you know, desire.
I'm lost here.
What?
I'm lost here. You weren't here before.
No, I mean, this is a man and a woman. They might not be getting married, so you're saying
there might not be a mitzvah for women to get married as much as it's for men to get married.
So there might. What do you mean? It's not a mitzvah for women to get married.
Well, if the mitzvah of getting married is tied into the mitzvah of pru or vu,
okay,
and if the mitzvah of pru or vu is predominantly in men, so then the mitzvah will be for men to get married. But yeah, there might not be a need for a mitzvah for women to get married because they're more likely to want to get married. Also, there might not be the same need for a mitzvah, which we talked about earlier. You listen to the tape. Okay.
Isn't that like all the mitzvahs? Like the reason men have to do like more mitzvahs than women is because women are at a higher spiritual level and men need to get up to that spiritual level. So it's sort of like, you know, if a woman has, if you have a man and a woman and the woman is desiring something, you don't need to tell her to do it. Like the men, you have to push to do it. So it's,
So right, men need much more. Exactly, you could definitely compare it to a lot of other mitzvahs that men need to be pushed, need to be obligated, need the structure of it, when women are more likely to be able to do without the extra push. Yeah, for sure. Right. Women's job is to push men. Right. That's the idea. Women are already perfect, and then they meet a man to hopefully to get them to be as perfect as they already are.
The only times.
What?
King David, Solomon, when did it become that they had a mitzvah to marry honored woman?
Say it again?
Like King David.
Yeah.
It had Solomon and the honored woman.
Oh, he had 100 wives? That was not a mitzvah. He actually did something very wrong by doing that.
Okay, when did it become a law or a mitzvah to have only one wife?
Oh, the one wife. For Ashkenazi Jews, about 1,000 years ago. For Sephardic Jews, about 5 minutes ago. Sephardic Jews were practicing. Sephardi is the wrong term. Eastern Jews, let's say, here.
Okay.
Middle Eastern Jews. I mean, we're involved in polygamy 50 years ago. There's a whole big issue. We talked about this in our Sunday morning class, about a whole issue of when the Jews were moving in from Iraq, Syria, from Iran, into Israel. And now you've had Ashkenazi Jews and Jews from the Middle East kind of living together in one society. What? Being displaced.
Out, it's not actually moving.
Okay, but that, okay, now I get into the politics of what happened. Yeah, you're right. Being displaced, or I'm sure men wanted to leave.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there. Yeah, the Ashkenazi Jewry, basically, at the initial stages that a substantial Jewish community was living in Europe, they took upon themselves that they would stop polygamy.
When did the Christian pick that up?
I don't know.
You'll have to ask them.
When you go to your when you go to Catholic
class, I think it was way before. I heard that somewhere.
One of the reasons given why Ashkenazi Jews stopped practicing polygamy was because it was not happening in the Christian world, and they thought they'd look backwards and barbaric if they were doing it. But that since that wasn't the case in the Muslim countries, where polygamy was still happening. So that was one of the reasons, given as to why.
I heard from Rabbi Mordechai Becher from Shalom TV. He gives it from Gateways.
Let's go into the source sheet, because there's a few issues I want to talk about this as well. So, practically, what is the mitzvah? What is the mitzvah of Pur Avu? The Shulchan Aruch writes here in page number 2, source number 2, that once a person has had a boy and a girl, they have completed the mitzvah of be fruitful and multiply. So as we break it down to the side, so when we just discuss be fruitful and multiply, we're discussing just the commandment of having one boy and one girl. That's the minimum. And then after that, there's an additional mitzvah to have more children, but be fruitful and multiply, the way it's defined in the Shulchan Aruch is one boy and one girl. Now, the next verse has an interesting case. If someone has children when they were not Jewish, and then the person and their children convert, the parents have fulfilled the mitzvah of Pur Avu. Okay? So, either someone converts and they've had children, or they convert with their children, so it still counts as the mitzvah. You don't have to...
If they convert but the children don't?
That's an interesting question. If they convert later in life but their children don't become Jewish... Mm-hmm. Hard to say they fulfilled the mitzvah.
Yes.
What?
They according to the Maharil, if only the parents convert.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. There you go. I didn't know you. That according to the Maharil, even if only the parents convert, they fulfill the mitzvah for very good. Yeah. So there you go. So if they've just by having children. Now, like we said, though, I mean, the mitzvah is a pretty universal mitzvah. We learned this mitzvah from Adam. This is before the Jewish people. So this is a very universal mitzvah. So I guess the understanding he has is that once you've added to the population of the world, then you've done the mitzvah.
I don't understand this. We don't have any control over what kind of sex we have. And know, if a person has
three daughters.
Like our rabbi. And I mean, you know, it's not okay. Clear.
No, look.
Well, she has three.
I've got
too,
seven sisters.
Yeah.
So I don't have to feel bad.
Right. No, so you're right. Well, we've had
seven sons, and the eighth one was a girl.
Well, look, I mean, if you think about some of those famous Jews that we have, right, Chana's seven sons. We have Rashi, who has only daughters, right? So how do we understand that as well? So first we see in the excerpt, the Mishnah says, in Yevamos, a person is not exempted from filling the mitzvah of Purim unless they already have children. But Shammai says, two sons, but Hillel says a boy and a girl. But look at the next source, actually, that's what I'm going to focus on. So Moshe Feinstein writes in his Tshuva in Evan Ezer, the second volume, number 18, he says, the Minchas Chinuch in the mitzvah number 1 concludes from the Shulchan Aruch quoted above that the mitzvah is based on the result. One someone has had a son and daughter. However, that's not the case. When the Mishnah says that a person is exempted from the mitzvah when they have children, it doesn't mean that they fulfill the mitzvah in fulling, the mitzvah is fulfilled with having children, but that the mitzvah is fulfilled by trying to have children. It is an action-based mitzvah, not a results-based mitzvah. Because the only thing that a person has control over is their actions, not the results. The Mishnah is teaching us that at what point a person is exempted from the mitzvah, not how one accomplishes the mitzvah. Right? So basically, the mitzvah is fulfilled when you try to have children. Right? But if you try to have children, so the Mishnah above is teaching us that at what point do you stop having the obligation? You stop having the obligation once you've already had a son and a daughter. Now, does that mean you have to have 15 kids if your first 14 are boys or first 14 are girls? I don't know. It doesn't have to go that far. But, I mean, the mitzvah is in the attempt, right? In the attempt. There are people who can't have kids, right? There are people who can't have kids. Lubavitcher Rebbe famously didn't have kids, and many others. So, they fulfill the mitzvah by trying to have children.
But that doesn't really fulfill the mitzvah. I mean, they're exempt.
Well, it depends how you look at it. Either they're exempt, or no, they fulfilled the mitzvah by trying to have that's
it's
the mitzvah.
Like a person, a young keeper who has to eat. I mean, he didn't fast.
Well, it depends what the mitzvah. If the mitzvah is the result,
it's fasting. But if he can't fast, he's exempt from that mitzvah. He didn't.
No, the question is the mitzvah the attempt or is it the result?
It's the result.
Well, that's what Moshe Feinstein says. No,
if
it's the attempt.
You have two children, but you don't even have one. You're only trying to have one child, right? You see what I'm saying?
You never intend to have two children?
Well, you can't intend to have another children until you've had a child.
Right.
You know, you can't say, well, you could, right? Fair enough. But, you know, the intent is I'm going to have a child, not I'm going to have two children right now.
Okay. You're right. No, you don't. Well, obviously, you know, they say you can't hit a 5-run home run. So, you know, you can't try to have two children in the first, when you have it, zero, yeah. You're not obligated to, like, have
five children in one shot.
No, I know. So you're not obligated to have, take fertility drugs so that you're, will have multiple children on the first birth, so you fulfill the mitzvah. I'm saying the idea is that the mitzvah happens in stages. By definition, the mitzvah is happening in stages, where you're having one child and another child. So you're in the process of fulfilling the mitzvah with child number one, then child number two.
Right. This may also be another proof that the mitzvah is on the man and not the woman, because the sex of the baby is determined by the male. So if you're supposed to have a man and a woman, then the man is controlling that, right?
He's controlling it, but he doesn't have much control over it.
But he has more control over it than a woman does, because the woman has nothing to do with it.
Well, yes.
It's not exactly true. There are physiological things that happen that control which sperm actually make it all the way down.
That's
so
true,
it's not just a male function. My wife's a fertility nurse.
Yeah, I know. He's got a point there. Okay.
All
right. That's also covered on the first page.
Yeah, so on the first page, we went through all the different the folklore about ways to pre-select your child's gender. Mm-hmm. And even the Talmud has an idea as well. And it's connected to both spouses. It's not just one versus the other. But yeah, I mean, these are like some, there's all sorts of, I brought up this, the question of gender preselection is that if it's the case, then you fulfill the mitzvah by having one boy and one girl. So let's say your first child is a girl. So could you argue you're obligated to have gender preselection for the second one to ensure it's a girl? Right? Then you fulfilled the mitzvah. Is that part of our thinking now with the way technology works?
How did you do that now?
Well,
so you go to the clinic and they harvest eggs and they implant them with sperm and you get little embryos and they look and they say male embryos or female embryos, and some people only want a specific one, and you say, okay, we're going to implant 3 female embryos into the woman and hopefully one of them will take. Some people will say, oh man, they're all female embryos, are the only ones that are viable, I don't want them, I only want boys.
Right, so it's a disturbing trend somewhat.
It is. I don't agree with it,
but but I mean, I could see, you know, you could have situations where a couple's only gonna have 2 kids, or only gonna be able to have 2 kids, or there are women who it's very difficult to have, you know, let's say she has a C-section, and it's gonna be hard to have many kids, and she knows going in she can only have X number, and the first one was 1, I got 1 more shot at this. I don't know, does it make sense? I mean, is there any sort of religious imperative, a Jewish imperative, to ensure you have the other gender for your second child if you have technological ability to do so, right? That's an interesting question.
There's risk in every kind of procedure, though.
Not really risk in it. This isn't a surgery in any way. I don't think there's any risk. I mean, there's a risk you could have multiple children. You could end up with triplets.
The ovas from the woman.
There's always a risk, right? It's not terribly great. That you don't go to the hospital to do it. They do it in the office. And
yeah, that's a pretty yeah. I've never heard of that being discussed as like being a potential danger. But okay. So certainly according to Rav Moshe, there's definitely no imperative to do this, because again, for him, the mitzvah is just in the attempt to do so. The Knesset Gedola next verse has a nice idea. He writes that if one's children are all the same gender, but they have a grandchild of the opposite gender, they fulfill the mitzvah for Ravu. Because at the very least, they've propagated, right. You know, they've caused multiple genders to come. So, you know, eventually it'll even out. Eventually you'll get the mitzvah, right? That's the way, that's his thinking. Helps me. Yeah, I mean, we all have stories. You know, in our community in Miami growing up, we had 2 families. One who had 7 girls, and then decided for 1 more, and the 8th was a boy. And this other family who had 8 boys, the 9th, and then they tried for a 9th, and it was another boy. And then at the Shalom Zachar, they made everything pink. That's what they did. The plates were pink. The balloons were pink. Everything was pink. Like, we're just having pink. We never had pink before.
My mother had 10 grandchildren, 8 boys, 2 girls. Now we have 2 boys, 8 girls. We're the second generation.
So it can be definitely cyclical. But are there any questions on all this? Okay, so